Hello, this is Allison Carter with the Milestones Podcast. Today is the 20th episode. This week is a milestone week for this show because we reached 1,000 total downloads this week and counting. When I started this podcast about 2.5 months ago, I really didn't know what to expect, but I honestly didn't expect to have this many downloads already. Thank you all so much for joining me. I wanted to use this episode to talk more about exactly what occupational therapy is, and more specifically, what we do with infants and toddlers. I realize that most people in the world have no clue what occupational therapists do. I have personally seen this in my own life when people ask me what I do for work, and I tell them I'm an occupational therapist. Then I usually pause and wait for their reaction, which most of the time they say something like, "Oh, so you work with people who have been injured, like for rehab?" It is then that I realized they didn't actually hear the word occupational, but instead they heard or assumed I said physical therapist. So I want to try and explain for everyone what an occupational therapist means in general, and with kids in particular. Also, since this is a milestone episode for the show, I would like to discuss my background, how I got started as an OT, and the progression that my life has actually taken to get to this point. I will explain my thoughts on where I would like to see things progress with the podcast and the community that we are creating through this show. The content of the show, I think, is at a higher level than some of the other podcasts out there under the child and family category. One of the differences in this one is that I'm not speaking from the point of view of a parent. Although I am a parent, I am speaking from a professional point of view who has many years of experience in the field. Since you are listening to this show, I know you probably have a higher level of understanding with these topics as well. I would like to see this become even more of a place where we can share information and research on child development and early intervention topics. My goal for this year is to provide a place via my website for people to find resources and information on all of these topics. I would like to have a centralized location where you can go and find valuable resources that you can use in your life. One thing I'm working on is getting sponsors for the show. I'm contacting companies that make equipment and toys for children with special needs to see if they would contribute to the show by maybe advertising on my website. Once I have enough of them sponsoring the show, I would like to try and set up a membership type program that would be available for anyone who's interested. You can still listen to the podcast for free, and you don't have to be a member. The plan would be for anybody that would become a member to hopefully get discounts on the equipment and the toys and things that if you would buy anything from the sponsors that are supporting the show. So if anybody knows of any companies or businesses that sells products related to special needs and you want me to try and contact them to get them to be a sponsor, please let me know who they are. Any company that sells equipment or toys or anything else that might be appropriate for kids with special needs in particular. I would really love to hear from everyone on this. If you live outside of the United States, you can also be really helpful with this because I'll probably be less familiar with the companies in your country. If you do most of your shopping on Amazon, there may be a particular Amazon store that you get your equipment or supplies from. If so, just let me know who they are as well. We can try and add them to the list and hopefully work out a deal to get some additional discounts from them. By sending me their information, we can start to build a collection of resources for our community. If you can send me the name of the company or the business name and their website information to my email at allison@mymidwesttherapy.com. Now I'm going to take a break from that topic and get on to talking about occupational therapy more in depth. I don't have a research study for today, but I have some statistics to share on occupational therapists' employment. Because I'm in the United States, I have more information about employment here than I do about employment in other countries, but I have provided some links in today's notes about OTs, occupational therapists, in other countries that you can check out after the show. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics in the United States, employment of occupational therapists is projected to grow 27% from 2014 to 2024, which they also say is much faster than the average for all occupations. They don't state the reasons for the projected growth being so high, but I'm guessing it's due to the high rates of autism, for one, and the large population of baby boomers in our country that are getting older. The need for OTs will continue to grow as well. For those of you who might consider becoming an occupational therapist, you might be interested to hear that the median pay in 2016 in the United States was $81,910 per year, or also $39.38 per hour. An occupational therapy assistant earned a mean salary of $58,340 in 2015 in the United States. The definition of occupational therapy practice for the AOTA, which is the American Occupational Therapy Association Model Practice Act, is this. It's kind of long, so bear with me. The practice of occupational therapy means the therapeutic use of occupations, including everyday life activities, with individuals, groups, populations, or organizations to support participation, performance, and function in roles and situations in home, school, workplace, community, and other settings. Occupational therapy services are provided for habilitation, rehabilitation, and the promotion of health and wellness to those who have or are at risk for developing an illness, injury, disease, disorder, condition, impairment, disability, activity limitation, or participation restriction. Occupational therapy addresses the physical, cognitive, psychosocial, sensory perceptual, and other aspects of performance in a variety of contexts and environments to support engagement in occupations that affect physical and mental health, well-being, and quality of life. So, I know that was a very long and wordy definition, but basically, when we're talking about occupational therapy, we look at occupations. Occupations in this doesn't just mean a job or a place of employment for an occupation. We consider an occupation something that you do as part of your normal everyday life and any other thing you want to be able to do for fun. Sometimes OTs use the line, skills for the job of living. This is one way of looking at it, and you can see how broad that term is. But the main points are to address concerns with people in order to make them be as independent as possible within their life. We typically measure the progress with independence through daily life activities and their ability to function during these activities. For example, with adults, some examples of their occupations might be working, cooking, planting flowers, driving a car, shopping, getting dressed, taking care of a pet or kids, going out to eat, doing laundry, and so on. Occupations are not just quote-unquote jobs or employment, but activities that you might find fun, or self-care or hygiene activities, and so many others. For kids, they do not have a job for work, so what could their occupations be? Well, theirs are similar to adults, with self-care or learning to feed themselves or just eating and eating skills in general or getting dressed. But more importantly, their main job is playing and learning. Playing with toys and other kids or socializing and learning how to interact with others are very important skills that can help them be independent in the future. For OTs, the word independent doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be able to do all of their occupations completely by themselves. You can still have a degree of independence by having the ability to get your needs and wants met in some way or another. This might simply include being able to communicate with another person in a way where you can have them help you get what you want or need. For example, a child is hungry, but they are not able to say, "I would like a snack, please," because they are delayed in their language skills. They could use a motor action to communicate with their parent and let them know that they would like a snack by making the sign for eat. Even though the child couldn't get the snack for themselves, they were able to get what they need by communicating with someone else who could help them get it. Of course, with kids, they go through their developmental stages, and there are times when they are just dependent simply because of their age or their stage in life. They haven't maybe reached the age where it would be expected or appropriate for them to ask for something, either with words or with signs, when they're only 3 months old. So when working in early intervention with kids, we have to keep this in mind all the time. Is this something they would or should even be doing at this age? Occupational therapists work with infants and toddlers who have a specific medical diagnosis that is typically associated with developmental delays or other medical issues. Some examples of this would be kids who have a diagnosis of Down syndrome, autism, cerebral palsy, seizure disorders, prematurity of birth, very low birth weight, or other diagnoses that place them at a higher risk for developmental delays. There are kids who are not diagnosed with any type of medical or other condition at birth, but maybe their parents or their doctors have noticed that they appear to be delayed in their development. We also work with those kids as well, if it's appropriate. In the early intervention program, like the one that I work with, we would come out to the home and complete an evaluation with the child and the family. We assess what the child is able to do based on our observations of them and by asking the parent or caregiver questions about their development. We consider all areas of development, including, but not limited to, fine and gross motor skills, cognitive or problem-solving skills, self-care skills, which usually include things like eating or feeding, getting dressed, toilet training, brushing their hair and their teeth, and other things like that, social skills, and even communication or language skills. While we are not necessarily going to be able to work on all of these areas specifically, we do often work on them in a general sense. To explain this more, my earlier example of the child signing eat to get a snack may seem like something that would fall under language, which should be something that a speech therapist works on with them. And that is true. The speech therapist would likely be involved with them in working on that skill. However, from the OT perspective, we are focused on finding ways the child can become independent, which in this case means they are working on the skill of asking someone for help and getting a snack by using a sign. The sign is often one that they would have been working on already with the speech therapist, who can help the family determine if signs are the appropriate way of helping them learn to communicate at that moment in time, or if they should use some type of a picture or other form of communication based on their individual abilities and needs. By the way, signing is a motor skill that some kids have trouble with in and of itself. Many of the things we do in early intervention overlap greatly between the different therapy disciplines. However, we're often looking at it from different perspectives or reasons why we want to see them do things a particular way. In the earliest months of life, OTs work on a lot of gross motor skills that people usually associate with physical therapy. But again, in early intervention, the skills overlap quite a bit. Also, as the OT, we know that the gross motor skills are building blocks for skills that we're going to use the rest of our lives. We have to develop those early gross motor skills of things like rolling over and lifting up their head, pushing up on their tummy, crawling, getting in and out of sitting, pulling up to stand, and everything else in between, so that our bodies will be ready to do the more difficult fine motor skills and other skills that come along during development. Those skills could be affected for the rest of our lives if we don't work on them from the beginning. I've talked about the core strength and endurance for sitting before, so that when the kids get into school, they're able to sit at their desk and do their work. Their handwriting is a very, very, very fine motor skill. Also, even before that, we work on two-handed or bilateral activities where you use two hands to complete games like stringing beads or pushing Legos together or other blocks. This is fun for kids and part of their job of playing, but also sets the stage for later two-handed skills like holding a toothbrush with one hand and putting the toothpaste on using the other hand at the same time, or holding paper with one hand and cutting the paper with the other hand with scissors. Other things like managing lids of milk or water bottles or toothpaste or ketchup, or many other types of foods or self-care items that often take both hands to complete the task. Also, using a fork and a knife to cut up food someday. It makes getting dressed, tying your shoes, and other self-care skills easier when you're able to use both hands in a coordinated manner. When we work with kids in early intervention, it is play, and it should be fun for them because they are kids and shouldn't be too serious. However, it is not only play, but actually setting the stage for their future independence. We want to work on these skills when they are little, so they have a lot of time to practice and get better at them, so that one day they can become an independent adult within their own range of abilities and needs. Earlier in the show, I briefly mentioned occupational therapy assistants. I wanted to touch on this a little bit more. In case anyone is thinking of becoming an occupational therapist, you could also consider an OT assistant job, or if you just want to know in general what the difference is. The occupational therapist assistants, or also they're considered COTAs, Certified Occupational Therapy Assistants, after they take their national tests after graduating from the OTA school. The major difference between OTs and the OTAs is that the occupational therapists, the OTs, can perform evaluations, write up the plan for each individual, and write up the discharge when the person is done with therapy. They are also supervisors for the occupational therapy assistants. The occupational therapy assistants are able to work with the children or adults directly and provide services to them by following the plan laid out by the OT that completed the evaluation and the plan. If you're looking for a job in this field, it could be a way in, but without having to go to school for as long as the OTs. The only thing about that is they also typically don't make as much money as the OTs once they start working. The school for the OT assistant is a 2-year associate's degree from the OTA school, and the occupational therapist is required to get a master's degree in OT, which takes 3 years to complete. But before you can get into the OT master's program, you have to get a 2-year bachelor's degree, and that degree can be in any field you want. After completing the OT program, you take a national certification exam. If you pass this, then you are considered registered, and you can start to look for employment as a registered OT, or the letters OTR come after your name. In the United States, we also have to sign up for a license in whichever state we're going to work in. Since I live in Kansas, but the border of Missouri is so close, I have a license in both Kansas and Missouri, so I can work in both states. I said I was going to give my background today, so I guess I will move into that part now. When I was in high school, my senior year, I had fulfilled enough credits to graduate that I was able to be part of an apprenticeship program. This is where we could pick a profession that we're interested in and take some hours out of school to go and follow or shadow someone who was working in that profession instead of just taking extra classes to fill up the rest of the school day. This was a very cool program that was supposed to help us decide what we wanted to do when we grow up, or as we were planning on going to college soon, maybe what we wanted to major in college. At the time, I was interested in physical therapy because I had 2 knee surgeries during my teenage years from playing soccer and many other sports. I had many months of physical therapy to recover from each of these surgeries, and I knew how beneficial it was for me to do the therapy, so I was interested in learning more about it so I could help other people as well. The school district had a physical therapist for me to follow, but she didn't have quite enough hours for me to shadow her that would complete my requirements for the high school program, so they paired me up with an OT for the other hours to make up for the rest. I wasn't as excited about it because I had never heard of an occupational therapist and I didn't know what it was and I didn't think I would really be that interested. But I went with it because it meant I got to leave the high school and meet the therapists at the elementary schools where they were working. What high school student wouldn't love to have that ability? As it turned out, I really loved the occupational therapist and the work that she was doing with the elementary school kids. The PT was great at what she did and was also a wonderful person. But in reality, it just didn't seem as interesting to me once I saw what the OT was doing. The PT was mostly at that point into stretching the kid she was working with and also working on some strengthening and gross motor skills. The OT was doing fun games and activities and crafts, and I saw the excitement in making these things fun for the kids, while also working on building their fine motor skills and their sensory skills at the same time. From that point on, I knew I wanted to work with kids and that I wanted to get my degree in occupational therapy instead of physical therapy. So that's exactly what I did. When I started college at the University of Kansas, I didn't quite understand what the prerequisites were, and no one really helped me with this in the beginning, so I ended up taking some extra classes that I didn't actually need to have in order to apply to the OT program. It turned out good anyway, because I ended up getting a bachelor's degree in child development or human development and family life with an emphasis on child development before applying to the OT program. Understand that this was back in the day before the OT programs were master's programs, so the requirements to apply were different than they are now. Anyway, I was accepted to the OT program at the University of Kansas Medical Center, where I completed the program and received my bachelor's degree in occupational therapy. After completing the national test with the NBCOT, or the National Board of Certification for Occupational Therapists, and passing, I became registered as an OT and started working. I've been working in the Missouri program for infants and toddlers ever since. I've watched this program change in many ways over the past 15 years or so, but I do believe it has evolved into an even better program than it was when I started. My passion in working with kids and their families is largely in educating the parents and caregivers and siblings and other family members of the children with special needs. This is satisfying for me because I know that we see the most amount of success or progress with kids when their whole family is involved and invested in their therapies. The family members are the ones who are with these kids day in and day out, so it makes the most sense for them to be educated in how to help their child be successful. This passion has led me to the point where I'm at today. I want to be able to educate not only parents, but other therapists and teachers or anyone interested in knowing more about child development. So the podcast has become my way of accomplishing this. This is why I'm always asking you who are listening to contact me in some way or another. I want to know what your questions or comments are so I can try to answer or address them if possible. I would like for this episode to be an icebreaker of sorts, where you have more information about my background now. And so I want to hear from you guys. I would like to try and use this to try and build a community of people who can support each other and just keep the information flowing for everyone's benefit. You can contact me at my email, allison@mymidwesttherapy.com, or on my Facebook page at My Midwest Therapy. Thank you so much for listening.